The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Wake up, Atlanta. This is The Morning Shift. I am Squid Billy. He's the All-American. Former national champion.
That is not the voice of nationally televised reporter Tiffany Blackman, if you haven't noticed.
Really?
The sultry sounds, man. The sultry sounds.
Yeah, she's probably hopping on. Well, I guess her flight was a little bit earlier. Anyways, look, it is Snowmageddon part two, maybe. Nah.
No, dude, come on. Don't be a doomsday prepper. For the love, you're gonna incite panic out there.
Well, from what I hear, the stores panic has already set in, with as far as how people just purge the grocery stores.
I went to Publix yesterday.
Yeah,
I was on the phone with you guys talking about the show today. I went to Publix. My wife's like, "Hey, kids are gonna obviously be home from school. They've been stoked about these little chocolate chip muffins I've been giving them in the morning. And since you're gonna be at work, would you please stop at Publix and get them more chocolate chip muffins?" And I'm like, "Dude, simple trip, right? Chocolate chip muffins. How hard could this be?" Parked 300 yards away from the front door of Publix.
Well, how big a muffin are we talking?
I'm talking about the tiny.
Oh, like the ones that come in a package.
Yes,
like five to a package. Like
no, not they're not. Yes, those are the same muffins, but these are just the ones from the bakery that you wanted, like in a little plastic carton.
Oh yeah, you know what I mean? The cupcake thing.
So yeah, so I went and got some of those, thinking, okay, simple trip. No, not simple at all. And because I was listening to Carl and Mike talk to Rusty yesterday, they had Rusty on. There was breaking news, the Carson Beck stuff we'll get to in a little bit. And Rusty, his first comment was, "I think I'm going to have to do an Oklahoma drill in here on the produce aisle to be able to get whatever I need at Publix." And, of course, he's up there in Rome. I think they're looking at a little bit more intense of a storm than we were. But nonetheless, I walk into Publix shortly after. And, yeah, he was right. There was – and I'm not exaggerating when I say this. Chicken and pork, completely gone. Like, completely sold out of chicken and pork yesterday. A little bit of beef left.
I get that. Although, not sure why the pork went before the beef, but... I mean,
I'm not either. It was strange. Like, the whole white meat section was completely gone. The beef, there was still a couple of brisket flat cuts. I almost bought one. And some ground beef.
I'm a whole... I need the whole.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, it's just so expensive, man.
I know. It's just
outrageous.
Just, to me, it's more... It's worth it more to go through the process with the whole. But I've got so much... red meat in my deep freezer.
Shout out to Omaha.
Yeah. No, absolutely sauce. Omaha. Omaha steaks. It's loaded with Omaha steaks. We've got a few other ancillary things that I've just bought. I have a problem when I go through Kroger, and if it's the meat man's cell little cubby where it's like one little space. It's like you can get anything you want between, you know, this section and this section in between here and there, but they have the meat special.
It's not so much here or here.
Yeah.
Right here.
But I pretty much buy something every time. So my deep freezer is stacked.
Yep.
And then I get the 4-pack of the Tony's pizza from the Sam's. The frozen.
Yep.
And then I search it up. I throw like my extra pepperonis on. I throw extra shredded cheese.
You're a Tony's pizza guy?
It's Jack's frozen.
Okay.
It used to be a Tombstone guy, but they started liking their pizza too much.
I feel like you can tell a lot about a person. And of course, guys, we'll get to the college ball playoff here in just a second. Epic game last night, and also Terry Fontenot's presser. But I feel like you can tell a lot about a guy by what frozen pizza they get at the grocery store.
What does mine say?
Used to balling on a budget and.
yeah,
but is that fair?
Yeah, no, that it's very, it's actually pretty accurate. It's like, okay, this guy's been living large on little,
balling on a budget,
but that's why I charge up. I throw the extra shredded cheese on. I buy the pepperonis. You know, like when you make your own pizza.
Yep. Do you buy the regular pepperonis or the turkey? I used to buy the turkey pepperonis.
Nah, I ain't messing with that turkey. Yeah. So that's the worst for you. It's worse for it. Yeah, there's something about it. It's got
preservatives or something.
Sodium, higher in sodium or something. Yeah, I don't know. I read it on Twitter.
All right. Yeah. Because everything is factoid on Twitter.
Yeah, specifically said pork bacon better than turkey bacon.
Yeah. I don't know. Dylan and Dede, are y'all, what frozen pizza are y'all going with? I'm going with, I'm usually a DiGiorno guy. I'm a DiGiorno, maybe even the square DiGiorno's.
I'm right there with you. If I am not balling on a budget, I'm definitely going DiGiorno for sure.
Well, if you're ordering DiGiorno, you ain't balling on the budget. You have a budget. Well,
I was going to say.
Yeah, exactly.
He said if I'm not balling on a
budget. Yeah, if I'm not balling on a budget, I'm going DiGiorno. But if I am, you know, trying to be a little bit tighter with the funds, I just honestly will go with a Kroger brand.
Yeah, that's not a bad call. Yeah. Also, I mean, I tell you this too. The Detroit-style Kirkland brands, they come in a two-pack at Costco, so solid.
You want to know another good brand, too?
Yeah.
The California Pizza Kitchen frozen ones are good, too.
Those are, dude.
No, he's onto something.
Those are good, bro.
Those are in line with Freschetta.
Yeah.
Freschetta's.
Nothing Dylan said he is ever balling on a budget, because every pizza he right. wants is like $10.
Balling on a big budget.
Those California Kitchen pizzas aren't cheap either. I used to eat Tombstones because they're very good price, and you get the meat, the mighty meat or whatever, the three meats or whatever.
Yeah.
But it feels like
meatitarian.
You know, it feels like inflation is hit, and they've gone up a little bit. And so when I went to Sam's a while back, they had Jack's for like four for like $9.99, and I was like, in.
Yeah.
I can make this pizza. Sold. I can make this pizza better, and I'm getting out cheaper. So
before we get to the college football playoff, I had three neighbors, and I know that you're close to your neighbors, so I'm just curious to ask you. I had three different neighbors in my neighborhood on my wife's group text that bought sleds for today. Seems a little ridiculous. But I said the good news is we can just borrow theirs.
Well, two things. We have one that has actually two of ours have multiple sleds from their kids, so that'll fit me easily. And and two, there was a fight that broke out last night on our HOA Facebook page.
Oh yes,
why you should
Facebook page drama.
Why people that live in the neighborhood shouldn't go on our golf course and go sledding because Eagle Watch posted something.
Oh, like gonna tear it up.
Yeah, and so this younger kid and this lady, I'm assuming in her 40s or above. I'm not, you know, are like arguing on just one thread, like going back and forth. Like, well, it's trespassing, and I hope you wouldn't teach our kids to trespass. What does it matter? Leave the kids alone. And neither one of them are listening to each other. It was basically like sitting at a protest where two of the sides were facing each other, and they're just
yelling across the parking lot
no
at each other and calling it Facebook.
No one's listening to anyone.
Yeah.
So
that's,
it's hilarious.
So funny, man.
Anyways, let's talk about the game.
Yeah, you and I, I was going to say, you brought this up earlier about you and I watching the game together.
That's the first game we've ever watched together live that I remember.
Isn't that funny?
I know, it's wild.
We've been doing the show almost 2 years.
And we've watched a ton of football games together, but we've done it through a film breakdown version.
Or we're both at the stadium and not sitting in the same spot.
Yeah.
And we're both watching the same game, and there's always a couple of text messages back and forth. Man, did you see that? Did you see this? Did you see that? Did you see the... I'm usually talking about something up front, man. Did you see that pass off of that twist stunt up front between the guard and the center on that last play? And you're like, absolutely did not see that.
Let me go back and watch it.
And you'll drop something from Arch about them being in cover three, and I'm like, nope, wasn't paying attention to the back end on that play. Nope, it's all happening in the box.
Well, and it's also who taught you how to watch football, or you really learned breaking film down from being in an offensive line room.
Yes.
And having an offensive line coach who was looking at, like, Jeff Van Note was, the first year I was on Falcons, I was working with Jeff Van Note in the pregame. I was producing. And he said something like you just said. You know, did you see him pass off that stunt? And I said, Jeff, how the hell are you watching this game? I didn't see any of that.
Yeah.
He goes, you watching the quarterback? And I go, yeah. He goes, because you're watching the ball. I go, stop watching the ball. He goes, watch the game inside out. Watch the line, and everything forms, and your eyes go each way. One goes towards the secondary and try to go towards the quarterback. Try to see everything as you widen out.
Yeah.
And
he's so right. If you just look back on the defense side of the ball and just kind of like broadly look at the spacing, you'll get an understanding.
Yeah.
And honestly, I want to talk about the offensive lines from both of these teams last night. But the secondary part is probably something I wish I could pay attention to more. It's just literally, I'm just programmed.
Well,
it's all about the stunts up front.
And that's Arch. Like, a play will happen, and we haven't even gotten a replay yet. And I'll be like, because I'm spotting for Wes, and I'm watching the ball. So first thing I do is I come up, I want to see who's like, is there any changes on the offense so I can help Wes? And he normally doesn't need that much because he's so sharp on that stuff. But then I look at the line, right? Who's in defensively that might make a play? And then I want to look at their secondary to see what covers they're in, if I can figure it out. But Arch will see that McGarry missed a block over here.
Right.
But also see that if he did not miss it, he's got, you know, Kadarryl Hodge running free down a skinny post.
And that's why Arch is the best, because I would never be able to see that.
But that's the way. And then I go back and I watch it, and you can see it play out exactly how you described it. I think that's how you can learn, to me.
Well, speaking of skinny posts, how about Christian Gray with the big interception last night for Notre Dame and Drew Aller? We talked about it yesterday. I thought maybe they could force him into a mistake or two. It came at the worst possible time, possibly in his career, that he throws the interception right there in his own territory to Notre Dame and Christian Gray. They pick it off a couple of plays later. They're nailing a field goal that'll send them to the College Football Playoff National Championship game.
Yeah, you said it about Aller. I said it about Riley Leonard, if you remember. I said he'll throw you one if you can. You know, he had thrown three interceptions of his last five games, through two more last night. But, you know, Notre Dame's defense was able to hold these two teams. This reminded me, and the people are going to get irked as hell at me, but this reminded me of, like, Alabama, Georgia, with a little less speed at the wide receiver positions. Like, but do you see the way they played in the trenches, the way the running backs were, both quarterbacks were at times not afraid to pull it down and take off. Now, Riley Leonard is more of a runner, but Drew Aller had a couple of times where he took off. He ran a little bit more than I feel like I've seen him do normally.
Well, look, we got 2 minutes. I this is my biggest question. I want to ask you this because I do feel a certain way. It would either of these teams, let's just throw both of them in the hat, either of these teams beat the Ohio State team that you saw play Oregon?
And in fact, I said that to my we watched like three quarters together, and I was sitting there when I went back and I was watching the fourth quarter, and I said, because I think Penn State was winning, and I sit there and it hit me. I said, they can't beat Ohio State.
Yeah.
I was like, they can't score. They can't score enough. And that's my problem for Texas. To me, Texas is just like both of those teams that we just saw offensively, but they do it more through the air. But at both times, teams have trouble scoring. They can't finish. They'll turn the ball over in inopportune times. It was also, remember that I told you it would be 13-10 or 34-31 or something like that? It was both. The first half was a 10-0 ball game, and then they just exploded in the second half.
I think there was 6 minutes left in the third when it was 10-10. The over-under yesterday was 45.5 that I got it at. I took the over, and at midway through the third quarter, I'm like, boy, that's a busted bet. There ain't no way this game's hitting the over. Then all of a sudden, they both throw it into overdrive, trade touchdowns, going back and forth, trade explosives. And to your point, I think that Texas at least has the ability to create an explosive. I don't think Penn State has that. And I'm not sure Notre Dame has that. Like, they don't have that. And I'm saying that as like a general statement. I'm not saying down in, down out, because obviously you can see last night they both created explosive plays in the passing game. But it just seems like down in and down out, when you're punching and counterpunching and going back and forth, and you look at what Penn State and Notre Dame has, Texas at least has those guys out wide that you feel like by themselves can hit a game breaker. Neither one of those teams last night seemed to have that. I'm not saying that neither one of those can win. And Notre Dame is going to stand every chance of winning this game. But they're going to have to play a perfect game, because if they don't completely gang tackle on every play, Ohio State is going to, or Texas, whichever one they end up facing, is going to break it open within one strike.
Yeah, defense, both of these teams' front sevens can win them, and could have won them as far as Penn State or Notre Dame. Their front sevens could single-handedly keep them in a game with Texas. Ohio State, we've kind of seen it a little bit with Penn State already, and Oregon, we saw that. But to that point, Notre Dame can play that dirty water. The problem is Ohio State and Texas have three or four guys on the perimeter that can bust it, right? It appears that Notre Dame and Penn State only had one to two. You know, Jeremiah Love was a guy that's outstanding. Tyler Warren and Singleton for Penn State, and Jeremiah Love and the receiver that scored the big touchdown obviously had a big play but the defender falls down at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
He slips. And then the juke move was pretty badass. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, he stuck his foot in the ground and was able to cut it back towards the middle field. And of course, you don't have any other defenders nearby. There's nobody for the safety to get help for the safety. He cuts back in the middle field. He just has to outrun everybody.
But it just feels like Texas and Ohio State are known a little bit more for scoring. And that I don't know if anybody can beat Ohio State right now.
I'm not sure they can either. It'll be interesting to see which version of Ohio State shows up tonight. We'll continue breaking that down, obviously, throughout the show. If you're out there on the roads, I hope you're staying safe. I hope you've got some nice warm caffeine in your hand. I hope you've got a Tombstone pizza or whatever else waiting on you at the house. When we come back, we're going to talk about this majestic Terry Fontenot presser from yesterday. Bo's going to tell us whether or not he thinks Kirk Cousins can be a backup quarterback next year. Stick with us here. It's the Morning Shift. Mike and Bo, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back in, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's the Morning Shift. Hanging out here. What's going on, man? What you chuckling about?
I saw somebody that reminded me of somebody, and I started laughing about something. Just, you know, when you think about something, like a story that you know about somebody, and then you see somebody that resembles them, and I thought about that story, and it made me laugh. As, you know, your cousin Bingle.
Yeah,
and you're talking about him and his brother. They both play ball together.
Like a big cage fighter.
Yeah, and it just the guy kind of reminded me of the tackle. I don't know why, but they're probably because they're both big dudes. But that story you told me last night, where him and his brother played basketball together, and I was better than you. It was all conference.
Yeah, they were 1 year apart. My cousins were both 6'8", 6'9". They're 1 year apart, and the younger one, the older one, averaged, I don't know, 17 a game. I have no idea what the stats were. They played at East Central Oklahoma, which is it's not a D1A, it's not D1A, I don't think, but, you know, it's a big school, decent school. And you'll see their name on the bottom of the ticker every now and then, right? And so my other cousin didn't average the numbers that the older one did, but he was all conference in his senior year. So they go back and forth. They just talk each other in a circle.
But that's what makes me laugh is it's such a, like, that's how brothers or, like, close friends are.
Sure.
They'll just bicker. And it's like, I was better than, you know, no, whatever, I was better than, I was, you know, it's just that whole, that's the epitome of kind of a brother or a close friend relationship where it's just constant sparring and jabbing, and neither one of you both sound like petulant children, and it makes me laugh.
We'll get to the Terry Fontenot sound in just a second. Dylan, you'll like this story, though. I was telling Bo about my cousins playing basketball last night, and like I said, they're both 6'8", you know, big dudes. But the younger of the two, when he got to his senior year, he was so bad at shooting free throws, like Shaquille O'Neal style, that they made him at East Central, like literally it's college basketball, start shooting underhanded.
No.
Right? He had to start shooting his free throws granny style.
Yo, like Rick Barry.
The knees. Yeah.
Rick Barry.
Yeah, and his percentage went way up. Like way up. Wasn't even close. Like he was so bad off the jump that they were like, nah, you know what, man? Like it's time to pull out all the stops. We might as well just at least try to go underhand because this is so bad.
How you know you've hit rock bottom as far as free throw percentage.
Yeah, and here's what's crazy. That's what he's the one that went all conference that year. Like he went all conference in their conference because like his percentages went up and he was getting fouled.
Yeah,
and he stepped the line underhand swish.
Yeah, I mean, knocked it down.
I mean, that's
hilarious.
That's why Rick Barry did it. He shot 90% from the free throw line.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know if you know that's Steph Curry is the NBA all time leader at 91 right now. Yeah. So it's pretty good. Yep. You know,
hey, sometimes it just helps to know yourself.
All right, you should start that, Dallin. When the game's on the line,
I actually hit two clutch free throws. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you got to know what you're not capable of. All right, let's this Terry Fontenot sound, guys. Yesterday, Terry Fontenot stepped up to the podium. He addressed the media, and I want to get into kind of what your grade would be overall for what his press conference was yesterday. But the first thing that actually popped out to me was his answer about, "Hey, is this job that we've done this year is it good enough?"
Well, first of all, I'm going to be real clear that we haven't done a good enough job. I haven't done a good enough job. We haven't won enough. And so when you haven't won enough, it starts with me. That's my job to make this team a consistent winner. And I haven't done a good enough job. It's my job to help everyone in the building be as effective as they can in their roles so we can win more games. We haven't done a good enough job of that.
When you hear somebody like that step up to a podium, like, it's like his goal in that setting with that answer is, I'm going to take the legs out from under this conversation before it even starts. Like, because the people that want their pound of flesh on the socials and everybody else listening now are going, yeah,
well,
you're right, you didn't do a good enough job.
Don't forget, there's always, and I'm not saying our media is pretty good about not just trying to sabotage people, but there's a lot of media members that are sitting in a room like that. And their goal is if they don't hear exactly what they want to hear, they go on the defensive.
They just keep asking.
Yeah,
just keep asking.
I said it the other day. We're in a state of the media to where we kind of treat coaches and players like kids treat their parents. I want the PlayStation. You can't have it, but I want it. And then you keep asking, right, and you find different ways, and you come back six or seven, and you're all you want is the answer. You want to hear the answer that right, you want.
You keep asking.
And when you
thinking it's going to change.
You kind of like, you basically, you're defanging the media when you do that.
Yeah.
You're taking their bite away, and you're saying, look, y'all right? Now I'm also opening the field to say we're kind of having an honest conversation. And that also leads to better questions about guys that didn't perform or places that you failed in. Maybe you can talk about maybe you get an answer why Terry thinks you failed.
Right. And I agree with that. And look, he hasn't done a good enough job. It's just point blank. He hasn't done a good enough job.
And it's weird because his first 2 years, he was so handcuffed by the salary cap and what was going on. But then the last 2 years, we were sold on, we have money, we are trying to win, and you have fallen four games under 500 in those last 2 years to the point where, okay, well, you had 2 years to kind of get your feet and figure out what you wanted to do, and now you did it, and you didn't. Nothing came out of it.
Yeah. The highlight of the presser yesterday to me, or at least the most notable part, all right, is when he is asked directly about the future of Kirk Cousins on this team.
Yes. So, you know, when we gave Kirk Cousins 2 years guaranteed. So when you do that, you expect to get high level quarterback play for two seasons. We understand that didn't happen. Nobody was happy to make the switch at that time. And we wanted to, again, to get that high level quarterback play for two seasons. So now what happens is we had to accelerate that plan and go to Mike earlier, and yet we're the allocation at the quarterback position, the cap allocation is we're eighth in the league. That's what we had planned for, where Kirk is the starter. He's not the starter anymore, but we're very comfortable moving forward with him as a backup. He's handled himself extremely well through the entire process from start to finish, from when he came in the building. And, you know, in these adverse situations, that's when you show your true character. Kirk's a great man, and he's been great support for Mike, a great teammate, great support for everybody in the building. So we're very comfortable moving forward with him as the backup.
Very comfortable moving forward with him as a backup. Now, if you are like me, everything you've peered at, NFL Network, ESPN.com, whatever, that's the headline. We are very comfortable moving forward with him as a backup. Now, there's two parts to that, in my opinion. Number one, he has to say that. Like, there's no other way around it. He has to come out and say,
sure,
we're comfortable moving forward with him as a backup. Sure. If not, even if you wanted to trade him, you have absolutely nothing to be able to back you up in a trade conversation if you say, well, it's time to move on. That's not going to be part of the conversation. Now, the conversation that you'll hear throughout our show and probably the rest of the radio station, I know Carl and Mike talked about it last evening. They do such a good job talking about these kind of things, but I don't see eye to eye with a lot of things they're talking about. And I tweeted this out yesterday. I'm curious to get your thoughts on it. I think it makes a lot of sense for all parties involved if he is the backup. I think it makes a ton of sense. Listen, here's the thing. You're going to pay the money.
Well,
he's going to want to play quarterback. He's got a no trade clause. His family has moved into a house that they've redone. They're not leaving Atlanta. I just think it makes a ton of sense for him to be around. Not only that, but 2 years ago, I don't have the numbers from 2024. 2 years ago in 2023, there were 9 starters in the NFL that made it all the way through the season without having to miss a start.
Okay.
9
yep.
of the 32. So you're probably going to need him at some point. And I hate to say that out loud, but you're probably going to need him at some point. We talked about Kirk Cousins being a coach on the field. You're going to want a veteran backup at some point. You're going to have to eventually spend another $5 to $6 million if you want to bring in a different veteran backup. It makes a ton of sense if Kirk is willing to do it, to have Kirk Cousins stay in the building. I know people don't want to hear that, but that's how I see it.
Okay, well, let's play the game. Let's just play the money game. So, first off, when he says he's comfortable,
show me the money.
First off, to me, the word comfortable means from a financial. All the other stuff you want to say, that's great. You're right. You're absolutely right. But to me, when I heard that, see, I listen to it. I just hear it some things differently because I think that's the player in you. But I'm thinking about the business side. Immediately, what I heard was we already spent the money. We knew we spent the money. We know what it's going to be. And we're comfortable with it because we had a plan for him to be a 2-year player, and we planned on competing and winning with him as a 2-year starter. Not cutting him, nothing like that. But let's just go through the money part of what it was going to cost. If he stays here as the backup and you don't touch it, at the end of the day, it's going to be a 2-year, $100 million deal, but his cap hit will be $40 million this year. Okay? So that is, and now, then
that's
you,
his cap hit and that's his salary, right? Like, no, those are lined up.
That's not, his salary is, his base salary is different because that cap hit has guaranteed money in it, okay? So, in other words, don't just worry about his cap hit. That's what matters. Okay. It's $40 million. So that's okay. $40 million that you don't have to spend anywhere else. Now, Michael Penix, his cap number is going to be 5. So you plan for $45 million, okay? That makes sense?
Sure.
That's your starter and your backup.
Right.
$45 million.
You were planning for 45 to be in that quarterback room.
If you cut him with a June 1st designation, the dead cap is $40 million. Post June 6-1 release, it's $40 million. And then you have no money. So it's a wash, in other words. That's why if you cut him, it's $40 million. Then you got Michael Penix at 45. Then you got to go get another guy for $5 to $8 million because backups are, you know, quality backups start around 5.
Right. And then, Taylor Heinicke made 4. I think Flacco made 6. You're right there in that window.
And Gardner Minshew made 8 last year, which he was kind of we think he's going to be day one start. So in other words, you're losing more money now if you cut him with a June 1st designation.
Right. And that's kind of how I feel about it, and we'll talk about it. We'll continue to talk about it moving forward. Hey, we got a lot more stuff coming up later in the show from Terry Fontenot and his presser. You won't want to miss what he said about Kyle Pitts, the development of Kyle Pitts, and how he feels about Kyle Pitts moving forward. I thought that was really interesting. But speaking of former starting quarterbacks and backups and moving on, guys, this Carson Beck news and where he might be headed, according to Rusty Mansell, I think it's going to shock a lot of people. Stick with us here. It's Morning Shift Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Breaking news, guys. Looking out the window, it's snowing, and it's snowing heavily. We got white sidewalks outside the building right
now. Yeah, I'm a little worried now. I didn't think it was going to come at 6:15.
Wasn't planning on this just yet, but it is not all only right. Snowing outside here in Midtown, it is snowing heavily here in Midtown.
I'll throw her in four-wheel drive, and we'll let her eat.
Yeah. Well, that's famous last words.
Well, look, it's all about doing it in moderation, man. Don't hammer the gas, don't hammer the brakes.
I have no doubt, and I have no doubt that I'm able to drive on snow. I'm with you. Throwing 4, I got good tires, everything else. It's about everybody else around you, I think, that concerns most people. And not only that, but if something does happen and you end up gridlocked, then it's not good for anybody.
Well, I've got multiple snowpocalypse stories when it happened back 10 years ago.
Did you say it was a 7-hour trip home?
One of them is our production manager at the old radio station at 79. We were over there near the batteries, right? The battery. We were near there. We were across the street from the stadium. It was where our studios were. And one of our production manager for the old station, Natalie, she came up because her studio was right next to our on-air studio. And she came up to me. She was like, "I'm worried." And I said, "Well, what's going on?" "Well, my husband's out of town. And he, you know, the boys are at home, and her kids were home alone, and she lived over near Lassiter, like down from there." And so I talked to my boss, and he said, "Look, we can handle it here. Take her home." And I had a four wheel drive. I had a F-150 at the point, the FX4.
Yeah.
And I had the Nitto Terra Grapplers on it. And I was like, "Let's go." So it took me 7 hours to leave the battery area to get her. I left at like 5:20. I think I got her home at like 11 something. And then she's like, "What are you going to do?" And I said, "I got to go to Buckhead. I got to go to the airport tomorrow. We're going to the Super Bowl. Mike Bell and Dave Archer and myself, we're going to Radio Row in New York." That's when it was a Seahawks Broncos game. So I drive back home, and then me and Mike Bell went the next morning. I picked him up down here in Midtown because I lived in Buckhead, and we went to the airport. We drove over a fence, crossed from Turner Field, everything. Hope the statute of limitations is up on that. But the story I was going to say is, when I was leaving her house, I got back right there to get on Canton Road, going to 75, and there's this car and this lady and this couple, and she's sliding by me, and that was the only point where I was like, "Oh no, do not hit me. Do not hit me. Do not hit me.
That's such a bad feeling.
Yeah, because you're helpless.
Somebody
you can't
almost
rear-ended
me last night on the way down back to Midtown. And I, like, you know, people just drive crazy when they're in traffic and congestion. And I just saw the guy flying up at like 100 miles an hour because he finally saw a window in the traffic. And then all of a sudden he's like diving in and out. And I'm like, no, no, stay away from me. Stay back. And he slammed on the brakes just in time. I don't know why people drive like that.
But the good thing, I think, real quick, is I don't think there's going to be a lot of people on the road when we go home. So I think we're going to have a clear interstate, hopefully. Hopefully. Please, people, stay home. Listen on the Odyssey app or your FM radio that you still have, and do not get on the roads.
Well, yesterday during Dukes and Bell, they got a little piece of breaking news. Breaking news on Sports Radio 92.9. The game is brought to you by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. And that breaking news during Dukes and Bell last night was that Carson Beck has entered the transfer portal. Now, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back here, but about
Allow you to do that then.
Yeah, myself to do this. A couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Carson Beck, I told you that if I was him, I would think heavily about entering the transfer portal. And it just has a lot to do with money. Unfortunately, that's kind of where we're at in college football. And Carson Beck still has the ability in college football to make a lot of money, given the right circumstances. And I think that's where he kind of found himself in this entire situation, is the ability to make a lot of money.
I mean, that's a really good... The base salary for Michael Penix this year is $960,000 as the 8th overall pick. Yes, he got a guaranteed $22 million contract, right? But the point I'm making is Carson Beck could probably go back and make $3 to $7 million as a starting quarterback at a power four school.
The rumor that Quinn Ewers has had $6 million offers and he's not even in the portal leads me to believe that I would think that Carson Beck's got to be at least in the $5 million range.
I think Arch Manning's making more than Quinn Ewers, I think. And I know Shedeur Sanders made a boatload last year.
I was under the impression that Arch wasn't making as much because his family didn't want him to just yet.
I don't know. I thought I saw something for a deal. You could be right. But the point is look, it's a win-win for Carson. Most likely, you're making what $3 to $7 million. So spend it right. No, you don't need another Lamborghini. That Cavender twins got her own money. So
he's marrying up with that.
So stockpile it, and then if you are a first round pick next year, if you work your way back to a high first round pick, you're gonna have another $22 million in the bank or 23 or 24 because the cap goes up next year. So does that number.
Well, work your way back into the first round, and look, it's all about zeros. If you can get between $4 and $6 million guaranteed. And you still have the ability to go to the draft next year, and you can improve that draft stock. Here's what I have as far as the first pick of the second and third round. Now, I don't know what draft grade he was getting. I don't know what feedback he was getting. He did not sign with an NFL licensed agent, but he still has his college guys, whoever he's using. Keon Coleman was the first pick of the second round, $4 million signing bonus, and $9 million guaranteed over his 4 years.
Yeah, and that's not
– over his 4 years now.
And that's going to go up this year because the cap's going to go up at least $20 to $30 million. It's going to be close to $300 million this year.
So Malachi Corley, the wide receiver out of, I think, Western Kentucky, he was the first pick of the third round. He's 4 years, $6 million guaranteed, $1.2 guaranteed, $6 million contract.
I think Drew Aller comes back this year.
And probably needs to get that bad taste out of his mouth after last night.
So I think right now, if you were telling me 2026, it'd be the two that pop off my head first are Drew Aller and Carson Beck. Just off the top of my head. I mean, I know that there are other guys out there. And look, I don't know what if you guys haven't figured this out yet, but big arm, power four school with good record and kind of follow things, that gets you hype as a quarterback, and then go sling it around and show that arm strength off at the combine or your workout. And it's easy for quarterback. Trey Lance was taken with a third overall pick.
Yeah.
So, or fourth overall. So Anthony Richardson played like 13 college football games and was the fifth overall pick, I think. So talent rises up, and that'll get you drafted.
You know what's interesting about this, too, and I obviously do a lot of Bama talking. I thought that this is exactly what I said that Jalen Milroe should do. I think Bama and I think that they're ready to move on from him, but Jalen Milroe can still make a lot of money at a different program.
You know where Jalen?
Somebody's going to look at Jalen and go, "This okay, let's bring him in here."
What about Notre Dame? Isn't Riley Leonard done? Now, I know they got that other kid that came in and played and Jaleen or Angelina or something, but
yeah, and played well,
yeah,
and played well last.
But imagine because they like to run it, and they're a run based team. I mean, they're a run first football team.
Yeah,
you can do it. They're not afraid to do a lot of. They would use him more, I think, in design runs. But I got the feeling from, and it might have been you that had told me. I heard someone around there basically said. There's being pressure on Alabama's coaches to make him a pocket, like to have him sling it as many times as possible, and he doesn't want to use the legs part of his game.
Yeah,
which I think is I think that's a disservice to him.
I think it absolutely is. But unless that pressure is coming from him and his camp, then
well, that's
it's his fault.
That's where I'd heard it was from his camp, and my point is. Why not use your legs to make you, as you develop in the pocket, and then you can get to a certain point. Like we've seen guys like, you know, Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That would
serve Jalen Milroe pretty well, I think, to go to a system. Although I feel like he was probably in a similar system this year, as similar as you're going to find in college football. Now, I have to say this before we move on. Rusty Menzel joined Dukes and Bell last night, and he was like he jumped on as it was breaking news that Carson Beck was leaving. They get him on air, and he had a comment that was really interesting to me, Bo, and I'm curious to get your take on this. He said, I have no inside information on this, but my initial thought is Miami.
It
makes a lot of sense, dude.
But
a lot of sense.
The first thing people say is, yes, where his girlfriend lives. And sure, I guess. It's the most obvious for multiple reasons. He's from the state. They have Cam Ward, who just is gone. He's going to the NFL. They have NIL money. They have that donor. Is it Ruiz, I think is his name?
Even know who their main donors are anymore.
No,
the Shapiro guy's all over Instagram these days.
I think that guy lost his money. But they had a guy pop up who owns a law firm down there or something, and he's a big Miami donor, and he's the one that's been funding all the money. Like when the NIL started taking off, he was the one throwing big money. So you know the money's there. It's getting to the point for Mario Cristobal where they don't have patience there. Like a lot of schools, the money that they're getting in from the one donor, they don't have the patience. He's kind of in a win this next season, or things could get murky there for him.
Well, and didn't this happen last year with Cam Ward? Didn't Cam Ward say he was going to the NFL and he got talked into going to Miami?
Yeah.
I want to say that scenario played out last year, so it makes a lot of sense from that aspect where you go, oh, that guy declared for the draft. Wait a second. Talk him out of that.
It's John Ruiz, he's a big attorney down there. It was him. He funded some of the stadium stuff. He's their big money guy right now.
Right.
And so I think there's pressure. So I think that's why all the signs point to they'll go all out to get a veteran quarterback who they know knows how to win.
Also a great selling point for Carson Beck. Hey, would you like to remake your image and possibly be a top five pick?
And
guess what? We just did that with our last guy.
They play defense in the Big Ten. They play defense in the SEC. The defenses are not as good in the ACC. I'm not saying they're bad. You still got there's a few teams here. You don't know what Florida State's a complete outlier. You got to play Florida next year. It's at home. So that's an SEC school with big hopes that you could get to go against, and you could showcase yourself.
I was going
to
say it's a game where you possibly showcase whatever your skill set is. So I think that's going to be it'd be interesting to see where Beck does end up. I thought that was really interesting coming out of Rusty just saying, "Hey, my initial inkling," because it does for a lot of different reasons. Miami would make sense for Carson Beck. Also, look, man, and this is where I'll leave it. CBS put out an article yesterday. CBS Sports did, and from some of their writers. And it basically opened up the window and allowed you to look into the Georgia program. This was written by Matt Zenitz and Brandon Marcello about the tension that was kind of around the Carson Beck situation with the University of Georgia over the last month or so. And basically saying that Kirby Smart only got a small heads up before the news came out yesterday that, hey, he's actually going to come back to college and he's going to be in the transfer portal. Sounds to me like Georgia, according to this article, sounds like Georgia's camp had a lot of questions about where Carson Beck was and what he was doing in the buildup to the Sugar Bowl. It was like he was not around the team. Now, of course, it was reported he's getting second opinions, but it sounds like he wasn't around at all.
Well, he was down there, though. Article. So that's
the
weird thing.
He was on the sideline because he was standing next to DJ Shockley.
I mean, I don't know. I think I think a lot has been overly blown about Carson Beck. I think he gets a lot of unfair criticism. You know, he gets blamed. He made some bad decisions with the football last season, but he also didn't get a lot of help. And when you don't get help, when you're getting pressured early and often, when you're throwing dimes and they're just getting dropped, you put a little extra pressure to make the perfect play. I think the pressure of the national championship too, the run game was nowhere near as consistent as it's been in the past. You just all around had the worst weapons you've had in years.
Yeah, there's no, like, 2 years ago, he had to be a complimentary piece. Last year, he had to be the absolute centerpiece of what they were trying to do.
And if you want to say, well, he folded under the pressure, then that's fine. I think that's a little unfair, though, because I just don't think to me, it was the worst offensive team Kirby's probably had since 2016.
All right, college football playoff obviously finished up yesterday, and Riley Leonard and Notre Dame are going to make it, obviously, to the national championship game. That'll be played here in Atlanta next Monday.
I had a conundrum watching this game.
Yeah?
Because
27-24 is the final.
Notre Dame, my neighbor pulls for them, and then Penn State, Mike Conte, and I'm very close to both these guys. So I was just trying to be neutral. But, man, it's hard not to pull for Marcus Freeman the way he coaches.
I know, dude.
Like, the way he handles stuff. Like, it's you know he's just seething inside, but he's smiling, and he's like, you got to be kidding me. And I just – his poise and his – dude, he gives up way too much information in his post-game – his halftime – speech or interview?
Yeah,
I'm like, dude, you're telling too much,
right?
Like, hey, no, keep a lid on it. Stop.
Hey, keep a lid on it.
Stop. Hey, stop saying that. But man, he's so likable. He's so easy to pull for, and it makes it hard because I hate Notre Dame.
Riley Leonard, is he an NFL quarterback? Watching yesterday, I couldn't really decide. He made a couple of throws. I was like, wow. And there were other times I was like, I don't think so.
I think he's a guy that's going to get drafted. And I think he's a guy that someone's going to say, let's put him behind a guy and develop.
Would it be fair to label him as a poor man's Bo Nix at this point? Runs a little bit, doesn't play to run, can throw a little bit. I think Bo Nix is way better with his arm.
I think there are a lot of signs that remind them of each other, but the I have never seen the velocity and the accuracy from Riley Leonard to the point that Bo Nix has.
Yeah, not even a poor man.
I think people way underestimate Bo Nix's arm. I don't think his Penix is good. I don't think he's got the arm Penix does, but I think it's close.
Yeah.
I just don't think he can
make the howitzer.
To me, Bo Nix doesn't make the throw that Penix does to Kadarius Hodge.
All right, we'll continue to talk about the college football playoff semifinal. Not only that, we'll get a preview later on in the show. That'll be coming up right around 8 o'clock for what we're going to see tonight. Texas against Ohio State facing off. Come back at the top of the hour, and make sure you're keeping the hands at 10-2. If you're listening to us in the car, the snowflakes are falling. We're going to talk more about this Terry Fontenot presser. And I don't think you want to miss, because I think there's like three different messages inside his answer about the future of Kyle Pitts. We'll break it all down. You'll hear from Terry Fontenot on the other side. Stick with us here on The Morning Shift at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.